Hey everyone, I'm Chris Hall, and you're listening to the Downtime Podcast. If you're looking for the most in-depth insight into the world of downhill and enduro mountain biking, then this is the podcast for you. A couple of important things before we catch up with Bex and Martha. Thanks to PNW Components for their support this month. Their listener discount has been proving really popular, and you've only got until the end of June to make the most of it. So if you've not checked them out, then head to pnwcomponents.com. They've got a wicked range of top quality droppers, remotes, bars and stems at great prices. I've been using their Bachelor Dropper Post with the awesome Lone Lever remote, and they come highly recommended. To get your 10% listener discount, just use the code DOWNTIME at the checkout. Also, thank you for your support. To keep this podcast running, things have to be on a very tight budget, so there's no money for marketing. So the success of the podcast has all been down to you spreading the word. Please keep on telling your riding friends about the podcast and let them know what they're missing out on if they aren't listening. If you want to support us, help spread the word and show you're part of a group of riders who are listening, learning and getting faster as a result, then head to downtimepodcast.com/shop. We've got loads of merchandise there, some really nice stuff. It's all super good quality. So yeah, have a look. Thanks to everyone who's bought something. It all helps keep the podcast going. Don't forget, subscribe to the podcast, join our newsletter, and you can keep up to date with everything that's going on. And follow us on social media where we're at Downtime Podcast. All right, this week I'm having a catch-up with EWS stars Bex Barahona and Martha Gill, also known as the Go On Girls. A lot has changed since we last met up, so we chat about Bex's move from privateer to pro, their challenge in 2018 season, some of the mental coaching they've been working on, how they approach learning stages, and plenty more. We also go on to get an update on their Go On Girls project, including the upcoming Go On Girls Festival. So, without further ado, here's Bex and Martha. All right, Bex Barahona and Martha Gill, welcome back to the Downtime Podcast.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us. I don't want to speak over the top of you, so I waited.
Awesome. Right, there's plenty to get into. So we were just chatting before we started. It was well over a year since we last sat down. So quite a lot has happened
in
15 months. We'll start with you, Bex. You were on the privateer program last time we sat down, and you're now a professional rider with the IBIS team.
Oh, yeah, it's mad. Actually, I can't believe it's been so long since I came and did your fourth episode, yeah. I think it was. But yeah, everything's changed for me. Life's got a little bit easier in a lot of respects, like when I'm at races and that. But then, I don't know, maybe a few more obligations and things and like things I've got to do. And I mean, yeah, I've got to be really sensible nowadays. Just still struggling on that one.
How did the deal come about? Did they approach you? Were you in touch with them?
Actually, it was in proper true Go On fashion, actually, like with a good mess up sort of. It wasn't sort of how it goes for most people where you sort of negotiate for a few weeks or whatever. I had the wrong email address on my Instagram account. I had a really old email address when I was at university. And then I can't remember who got in touch with me. Someone got in touch with me and said...
I think it was Katie.
Yeah, it might have been Katie. And then I think Katie Winton got in touch with me and was like, Bex, I think I was trying to get in touch with you. And then I got an email saying, we've been trying to reach you for a while and maybe you need to update your email address on your Instagram. And it turns out, yeah. So Tom, the CEO of Ibis Cycles, got in touch with me. And pretty much from the day I got the email to the day I signed it was probably about 10 days. So it happened really quick. And I had no idea that there was a professional team wanting to get me on board. So it was pretty crazy. You were in the car, weren't you? Do you remember when I had my interview?
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, get out the car!
Oh, yeah, I had to leave. I had to go to the shop, buy some biscuits something.
It was like an hour interview. I was and like, I'll only be 10 minutes.
You made me sit outside the car.
Yeah. I was like, I'll only be 10 minutes. I'm just going to talk to Ibis and then let them know who I am and whatever and what my plans are for next year. And then, yeah, about an hour later, she was freezing cold and she was like, let me in.
Amazing.
But you got the deal though, didn't you?
Yeah, we secured the deal. And
I mean, you did, not we. I didn't.
And now we're they can't get rid of me, basically.
Yeah, and what kind of impact has that had on you as an athlete, like from a performance perspective? How does that help being with that team?
Performance-wise, I don't think I'd do what I'm doing now, like ride the EWS without being on a team. I know it sounds kind of... Well, the support that they give me is like amazing. I don't know, I even know where to start with it. Like, for instance, I don't have really anything to do with my bike in terms of like it working. And if I look back, actually, there'd be many races where I'm just sort of hoping that the bike kind of gets through the race when I was a privateer. And like, I didn't really know if it was going to get through the race because, and yeah, it's, there's been such a step up for me. And like, the team has changed, like this is my second year now, and the team's changed quite a bit. With the riders have gone from 5 riders in my first year to 3 riders. And that focus on just 3 riders is really improved in terms of like, there's so much focus on us and like, everything we need to perform. So like, we're kind of like, all the pressure's off in the house, so we don't do any sort of like cooking and stuff. I mean, if we want to do some cooking, we can do it, yeah, for sure. I mean, you can end up having nothing to do race week, which is a bit weird. But it, I don't know, some people that puts pressure on them. For me, it definitely takes the pressure off because, like, I mean, you probably, when I go and see Marth like on race week, the difference in what I'm doing race week and the and what Marth's doing is like, you've got 101 things
to
sort.
I've got to go do this, got to go and chew this wheel, got to go and sign on, got to go to do the food shop, plan what I'm going
to
eat.
And then, yeah, I don't have to do any of that, which is pretty unreal. Yeah. Like, but performance-wise, like it's, I mean, my results have already started to go up, and I can, with all the support I'm getting, I can only see I'm going to sort.
Yeah, they did. You got your podium. You've got a podium, everybody.
We'll get to that.
Sorry. I jumped to your head there.
I'm blushing.
I just got all excited for it.
Gone all red and hot.
Tell us a bit about your program then, Martha. So you've got, like, I think last time we sat down, I think you were on Marin, but you've pulled together like an even bigger kind of package of sponsors now.
I can't quite remember. I think I was with Marin UK last year. No. 2 years ago, well, when we did the podcast.
Yeah.
But now I'm with Marin Global, so they give me a lot more support, like, financially to get towards the EWS, and then I've got a lot more support from my individual sponsors. I've managed to get them in myself, like Liat, Deity and WTB. They're all really good, and I really like the programme I'm on because I kind of have the freedom to do what I want more. I don't have the restrictions of having to do what the team wants to do. And there's definitely pros and cons to both. Like, I don't have as much support as Bex does at the race, but I like to be able to have that freedom and just to kind of go and do whatever.
How did you put all that together then? Is that relationships you've kind of built up over time?
Yeah.
You put a lot of effort into like going to see people as well over the last couple of years, haven't you?
Yeah, like, and last year I went to Sea Otter, and this year as well. And just going to a few things like that, events like that, and meeting people, meeting new people, and being introduced to people through people, you know. I said people a lot in that sentence.
One more time, please.
So yeah, it's all about the people, you know.
Got it.
She's
got
here
it
for the people.
So what advice would you give to other people that are looking to put? I said people, didn't I? What advice would you give to athletes looking to put together a program? Like, were you giving out like a pack with some information in? Is there data they're interested in?
Yeah, I definitely sent out like my CV and stuff like that. But I think it's about the relationships you've got and your personality as well. Just showing that you're a real person and you've got something to give back.
You like also, you stay quite true to yourself on like Instagram and other social media platforms. Like in terms of like Marth's not really following trends, so. And I think that comes across really well when you're making...
You're saying I'm a trendsetter.
I mean, with them red jeans you've got on, yeah. but no, but you say, like you post things that you want to post, and like I think that's started to get received quite well in terms of, like, these relationships you're building up, they like who you are.
Yeah, I think that definitely counts for a lot, showing who you are for yourself, especially on social media as well.
Yeah, well, I was going to ask a bit about social media, so you've both grown your followings certainly on Instagram since we last sat down, and having been working through that with the podcast stuff, it's hard work.
It's hard work.
Anything you've found that works? Any kind of tips for people that are looking to grow that kind of stuff?
I go through phases. Yeah. Like, there'll be sometimes like a month where I'm doing loads of stuff and I've got loads of content and loads of stuff that I want to post and I'm really enjoying doing. And that will just make it seem easy. But then other times you'll go through lulls where you don't have as much stuff to post. But you think, and then you kind of put this pressure on yourself and you're like, oh, I need to post on Instagram because I need to post regularly. And then that's when it kind of gets stressful sometimes.
You can kind of kill it for yourself as well, because like, it's a really nice platform to have to show who you are and like just be yourself. And I mean, for us guys, being silly. But then you can kind of kill it for yourself in terms of like, putting that pressure on. And if you've not got content, like, it's fine. Like, you can't, like, it's horrible to always feel like you've got to be going in upwards direction and, like, growing your profile and whatever. And, like, you can actually get really addicted to it. I've definitely, like, the start of this year, I caught myself being way too addicted to it, like, following, like, oh, I'm losing followers, or I'm gaining this many followers, and, like, or, like, oh, I'm not getting enough likes. And it's like, yeah, it does your head in. But at the same time, you have to do it for what we're doing, because we're helping sell products. And, like,
at the same time, it's a business tool, and that's what we offer in our sponsorship as well.
Yeah.
Do you have any obligations to your sponsors to post a certain amount?
No, but I'm pretty sure if I... in my contract, I actually have anything written up, but if I stopped posting, I'm pretty sure I'd not be getting re-signed. But I do
with a few brands, like, they want to, like, me to post about them, like, a certain time a month, and it's more stuff like when they bring out new products as well, they do that thing like we discussed, taking over, like, the whole of Instagram, and you see loads of athletes posting the same thing. And
you're talking about the Bombard technique.
The Bombard technique, yeah.
The Bombard techers. Yeah, we're going to do that with the festival, aren't we?
Yeah, we are.
Good stuff. Yeah, we'll get onto the festival in a bit. Last time we spoke, you both just taken on, like, professional coaches or trainers for the first time. I think you were both kind of doing your own thing up to that point.
Yeah. How many coaches have you had since then, Bex?
I've been getting my way through them. I'd started with Alan Milway, which was my first professional coach, and, like, learning, this was what, 2 years ago, 18 months ago?
Yeah.
And learning what it takes to train properly at this level, because I don't think I'd properly trained. Well, I hadn't, definitely. And then, yeah, that didn't really work out. And so then I moved to New Zealand for the off season, started training with someone in New Zealand, which was really good. I got loads of insights there. I learned loads, a lot of gym work I was learning there. And then moved back to Britain, started racing, and then decided I wanted to go local. So I've actually started working with quite a lot of people in Sheffield. So working with Adela Carter as my head coach, and then she sort of uses Phil Dixon, who's Annie Lass' coach. Yeah. On the XC program, so she uses Phil, quite a lot of input from Phil and other people she works with, and it's really nice to have, like, my group of people around me now, because I've got physios in Sheffield and they also work with Adela, so it's really nice to have, like, I see them all weekly, and it's nice to have it, like, right around Sheffield, and I can meet them and see them, and they can see what condition I'm in. And I think that's become a really big part of, like, some of my, like, performance this year so far.
Yes,
it's all local.
And Adela's traveled to races with you as well?
Yeah, she came to the last race, actually, which was super. It was more for it's a learning kind of thing. I wanted to bring her out to the race so she's never been to an EWS before, and she was part of the sort of IBIS crew that week, so she helped out loads, and she just got to see exactly what goes on, because, I mean, she's coaching me through the races and, like, all my training, but she hadn't seen firsthand what goes on, and I think it was super interesting for her, and I'm sure she's, I mean, we don't talk too much about, like, all her insights, because I overthink quite a lot of things, and I quite like it. Like, I think, I don't know, maybe in the future I'd really enjoy coaching someone, but I think right now, while I'm the athlete, I don't need to know too much about what she's thinking. But
okay,
she picked up some good things, I think.
Excellent. What about you, Martha? How have you been getting on with that side of things?
I've been to the gym 3 times. I was with Chris Kilmurray, and then towards the end of the last year, I stopped working with him. I kind of wasn't really enjoying racing much towards the end of last year, and found quite a few of the EWSs pretty grim, and I was ready for just a break and just to have a rest, and then just get back on my bike and just, like, have more fun and not have the commitment, or I felt like a kind of pressure, not from him, but, like, that I was putting on myself, that I had to do well because I was being coached, which was, I've never felt before, which was kind of weird. But then now I'm working with a friend called Faye Jordan, and she's someone that I've known for quite a while. She was, like, one of the first women I met when I first started racing enduros in the UK. And she's a pretty, pretty epic woman. She's done, like, an Ironman.
Oh, she's hard as nails, isn't she?
She swam the English Channel. She used to be in the RAF, and what did she do last... 1 year she did something where she was, like, did 10 kilometres of exercise a day.
For 10... Wasn't
for
it
a year. For a year. Oh, like, went year. Did a 10K run, 10K ride, 10K row for a whole year.
Impressive.
I was like, yeah, she's my kind of woman.
us.
So yeah, no, I've got a really good program with her at the moment, and she it's really nice because we've got it pretty flexible, and she'll help me mostly with my strength and conditioning stuff, like in the gym work. Like we did more in the winter, and then just kind of fitting it in between races and stuff in the season, and then I'll just do most of my biking is just like having fun and trying to go fast, and then the occasional effort.
Yeah. And what's been the kind of biggest change from when you were like creating your own programs and sort of freestyling the training elements, and now that you've got the structure, what kind of things were maybe missing before that you now know about?
I think you straight away get rid of the self-doubt because it's not your fault, yeah. It's not your problem. Yeah. And like I remember Katie Winton telling me, she was like, yeah, you should get a coach because then it's great. You just like, you wake up and you just do what's you do on what your program.
Yeah.
Whereas you're like, when you're doing it yourself and you're like, yeah, I need to go out biking at least 3 or 4 times this week and I'll probably go to the gym. You kind of have like a lot of self-doubt and like, or like listening to your body. It's hard to do when you've got like part of your brain there that's trying to be your coach, part of your brain that's being your body and like feeling and all the aches and pains.
Like, I can't be bothered.
And then the normal human part that's like, actually, I don't want to train. So yeah. Taking away that straight away is massive. Obviously, you take away, like I've noticed definitely, and I mean, I ride with a local girl called Chloe Taylor, who's doing EWS as well. And she's like sometimes like, oh, just come and ride jump bikes or whatever. And it's definitely hard work to like be like, no, actually, I'm on a road ride today or like I'm doing intervals. But it's, you've got to just take all them steps and like consistency pays off like big time. Just, yeah. Getting all the basics right and just following your program, and I mean you pay for it as well, so you might as well listen to it.
This is true.
A very good point.
Yeah. What about you, Martha? Have you found similar or?
Yeah, definitely. It helps just with like the commitment and motivation, having someone there for sure.
Like your program pretty different to mine actually. Yeah. Because Martha's on the road a lot more than me because of these industry relationships she's working with.
Yeah, I kind of.
So your program's pretty. I don't know. Flexible.
Yeah, that's what I wanted when I first started working with Faye. I wanted to have a more kind of flexible program, and so the main stuff I got off it was strength and conditioning, and then I just add in the bits. Like I feel like I know what sort of bike riding I need to do in intervals and efforts and sometimes. Yeah. And I feel like I can like diagnose what I need to go throughout to do throughout the season.
Yeah.
Like after one race, I'm like, right, I need to do like these highlight short something. Sprints or.
And also, Martha's been through the whole British Cycling sort of program, what's it called? Development?
Yeah.
Squad. So, like,
I've had a lot more guidance.
And understands like how training goes and like what the steps are to train. Whereas, like, for me, 2 years ago when I started with Alan Millway, like, I had no idea what it takes to be a professional like athlete. So actually Martha like doing some of her own programming is not that, whereas I literally wouldn't know where to start.
Yeah, that background has definitely helped me to like work out what to do now, and I'd happily be able to like go on the turbo and set my own session and like create little workouts for racing enduro.
Yeah. And how do you deal with, like you say, you're traveling quite a lot with sort of sponsor commitments and projects? How do you work your training around that?
Caffeine.
Sweetie. When I was in America for like a month after the EWS in Tasmania, and I was relatively staying in the same spot more or less. So I went to the local gym there a few times and doing like more bodyweight workouts as well, because you're not always going to have access to the equipment, but there's actually a lot of stuff you can do, just like bodyweight workouts, and you can do really good quality sessions and not have that equipment.
Like,
you can go out on the road
bands.
And
big elastic bands. Always do.
Yeah, I was going to ask what you travel with.
I was trying to focus on my sentence then, and you're like, oh yeah, I travel elastic bands,
and
big elastic bands.
Like big, like gym bands, and you can do loads with them.
Yeah.
But I mean, my travelling is really different because obviously I just turn up to a race and then I've got, it's more like
you don't have
activations.
To pay for your overweight luggage, do you?
Hey, less of that.
Do you take anything else other than bands, like rollers or
foam roller
kit?
Foam roller, hockey ball, golf ball.
That's all for deep tissue bands. Kind of rolling.
No, I just like
stuff.
To go and play hockey and golf. Basically.
There was a golf course in Madeira.
Yeah,
did one lap of stage one and then just put in
a few holes. Yeah, no, just all deep tissue and getting some twitches out of the legs and stuff.
Yeah. What about you, Marth? Any stuff you carry with you?
No, I just kind of bank on everyone else bringing them and then just borrow their stuff.
The people that are getting their luggage paid for.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good stuff. Let's talk a bit about 2018 season then. So from the outside, it appeared like a pretty tough year for everyone involved.
We were about ready to throw the towel in, weren't we?
Yeah.
We both got, actually...
Do you remember that one significant moment at the top of, in the Tweel?
Yes.
Of, what stage was it?
When it was lashing it down.
Yeah. Oh, the weather was awful.
I sent a video to my boss and I said, what did I say? I said, because we have this little running joke about when like training's hard or something like that. We have this running joke about like me working in a bank instead of working as a biker. And I sent him a video and was just like, get me in that bank.
Wish I was in the bank right
now.
Yeah,
I wish I was in the bank right now. And this was at the top one of the stage and it was absolutely lashing it down. But, and we were just like hiding behind these rocks. And
we were sheltered under these rocks. Yeah, so the stage we were about to race was this... It was actually a really fun stage. In practice, I enjoyed it, but it was this fresh cut, loamy stage, really steep. But after however many hundred people had practiced it and already raced it, and then the weather came down, it was just destroyed and it was horrific and it was so sketchy.
Just
to
race it, it's sketchy, but to ride it would have been, I mean, we'd have been right at home, very British conditions almost, but to race it when you put in that much effort and you're going that fast and you're completely out of control. And actually the track looked nothing like when you practiced it, which we're getting used to now, aren't we? Like, we're getting used to the fact that that's usually how an EWS goes, but we just hit a point where we were like, this isn't fun, actually. I'm not enjoying this.
A lot of the races were starting to turn into like survival races as opposed to just racing it. Like, quite a few of the trails were super technical. Like, there was... where were we? In Olargue in France.
Oh, God, yeah. My mum couldn't even watch.
There were some seriously techie trails there, like the most technical stuff I've ever ridden, I'd say.
There was actually wasn't there, that I got off.
Just
I got
scary.
Off and walked down it.
Yeah, it was so scary. There was that one where you got off and walked, and I just came up to it. I was like, oh, my God, here we go. Like, took a deep breath. Honestly, just held on and just, like, sent myself down it.
If you watch videos, like...
Missed the corner.
Even, like, no, it's not just, like, I don't know, the skill level maybe in the women's field. It was nothing to do with that. Like, the top men were...
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Sam Hill crashed
down
there.
On
everyone. It was one of these shoots where it was just a complete, you don't know what's going to happen. And I didn't have... Right. I literally mulled over that shoot for, like, the whole race. And I was like, I think it was on, like, second to last stage. And I was like, I just don't, like... There's this part of me, like the practical part and like logical, that just knows you don't know what's going to happen when you go down the chute. And I couldn't bring myself. And then there's the like risk taker part that's like, yeah, just do it. You want to win the race or blah, blah, blah. But
it was genuinely like a bigger picture. Like, I'm trying to preserve my life here and I don't want to die. So I'm not going to do this.
So for me, the sort of, the logical like part was just like, just you're going to run down it.
There's an interview of Richie Rude at the end of it, I think, from that race. And he's like,
no, it's Martin.
No, he was like, props to all the amateurs and all the people who aren't professional racers doing that, because that was seriously hard.
Yeah.
And then there's another interview of Martin,
and he was like, this
in
is
Slovenia,
not fun.
Austria, and was like, this isn't enduro, so this is survival.
So the race season last season took a bit of a turn, I think, and there was just a few races in a...
It was a build-up.
In a row, there was quite a lot of events like that. And there was good parts of the race, for sure, but there was just too much, like...
And the weather didn't
survival
help
mode
them.
Going on. And the EWS started to listen. I think I posted something, and then me and Chris Ball had a little chat, and they started to realise that people weren't really enjoying the races. And if the professionals aren't enjoying the races, like, how are they... Like, the people that are coming, amateurs are coming to ride it, like, they're not going to enjoy their holiday. And so I think they started to listen, and actually... Like,
they did turn it around towards
they
the end.
They turned it
of the
around
year,
towards the end,
for
sure.
In Ainsa,
and then
and
this
then
year,
finale.
You can tell that they've made a. They've. Definitely. I mean, the race. The next
you
race coming
see.
Up, we've
you...
got. We've got like a. There's a whole day put aside for if there's a wet weather plan, which is like. So I presume they'd like split or change stages or split the race or just move the whole race to the next day or whatever. So that's really good to see that they are noticing that, like, we do this because we want to win and we're competing and we're putting products through, like, the hardest test there is, but we do want to have fun at the same time.
Yeah, good to see. Yeah, it's good that they're getting feedback from riders and taking it seriously, I guess.
Yeah, they are, yeah.
And now the racing's like tighter than ever, isn't it?
Well, the women's is like especially in the men's.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's good.
Good stuff. And then you had a good result at National Champs as well, back end of last year.
Yeah, yeah, that was a bit of a... Well, I say it was a bit of a surprise. I suppose it wasn't. Like, I was pretty G'd up for that race. Like, Innaleithen is my all-time favourite place to ride, let alone race. So I was really excited to sort of turn it on for there. And yeah, it just sort of just felt really good on the bike, and the trails were insane, as they always are. And yeah, came away National Champ, which was one of my bucket list ticked off. So super happy.
Nice to wear the sleeve.
Yeah, yeah. Wore the sleeve for a bit, and then our kit changed, so unfortunately.
No more sleeve.
Unfortunately, I've got an orange sleeve at the moment.
Oh, well, but one of those things.
Yeah, no, it's really cool. It's actually, quite proud to wear it, really, actually.
Yeah, it's a cool thing to have, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm welling up.
Did they play the national anthem on the podium?
No, but can you imagine?
Would you know the words?
Something
about God and the Queen and saving the nation.
God and the Queen and save and just, yeah, I probably wouldn't have known the words now. But no, it was a really good experience, and like, and I think that gave me a bit of confidence as well in like what I am doing is, like, it's, I'm not, definitely was never going to be one of these riders that comes out and just breaks onto the circuit. Like, I'm building into it, and it just gave me a bit of confidence that I am going in the right direction, and like to win in Innaleithen was, yeah.
Yeah, good stuff. Martha, your first season coming from junior into elite last year.
Oh, yeah.
How did you find the transition?
Well, I didn't feel like it was a big step up, because obviously we're just racing the same trails, but it definitely made me start to push harder and want to push harder, because the times were tighter and there was just more competition.
I just remember when we were in Tasmania the first time and you were like... I was in open, and obviously Martha's in junior, and she's like, I was like, are you doing this drop? I'm a bit scared of it. And she's like, well, I don't really need to do the drop because I'm the only one here.
I've already won.
So yes, Martha's definitely got
Come around 2 years later, and I did do the drop in question.
She did do
this
the drop
year.
In question.
I did. I was
you
like,
had to, because I've got you're to in the women's it. Field now.
I'm a big girl now.
Did you feel any additional pressure stepping up, or was it just business as usual?
No, not really. I don't think so. The only pressure I feel really is the pressure I put on myself, I guess.
Yeah. Do you put any pressure on yourself?
Yeah, and that comes very rarely.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm super laid back.
Interesting. Well, so Bex is going to talk about this. You've been doing a bit of kind of mental coaching or psychology type stuff in the off season. Tell us a bit about what you've been up to and what you learnt.
Well, yeah, maybe I'm just like a head case. No, I'm probably a bit of a thinker, I suppose. And like, so when I got the opportunity to start working with someone again around Sheffield Way, I jumped at it, and it's been, I can't really put my finger on what we've been doing, but whatever we've been doing has been amazing and really insightful for just learning more about how the brain, it's not always specifically like, oh, well, if this happens, you know, like you blow out the first corner, how are you going to react to that and how you're mentally going to go? It's not really like that. It's more like just learning how the brain's working. And like, I mean, the biggest thing that my psychologist said to me actually was, that's probably been the most insightful thing, was when he told me that thoughts that come into your brain aren't true and they're not factual. I'd never put two and two together.
Deep.
Yeah, deep. Do you feel that? Do you feel it hit?
Oh my God.
when the penny dropped, and I was just like, and he's sort of like, he does a lot of analogies. Is it called analogies? When you like compare.
Yeah.
So he does a lot of analogies when he'll like say, so it's almost like you're wanting to cross a really busy road and there's loads of cars going by, and they're like your thoughts that are just constantly coming in the way. But they're like, if you just sort of like let them pass, you'll find a place to like come through and cross the road. And like, yeah, when he was telling me about that thoughts aren't factual, it just blew my mind basically. And now I've got like, because I've like come race week, you've got so many things flying into your head, and some of them are super unhelpful. Like, well, most of them are super unhelpful, helpful, because you're sort of, kind of always putting yourself down a bit and none of it's sort of relevant. So I've really been focusing on like what things I can do to put me in the best position to perform at my best. Because they're the only things you've actually got control of. So, yeah, I mean, I really couldn't like put my finger on the kind of stuff that we talk about, but that's the general gist.
Yeah. How often do you get together?
Probably about once every 3 or 4 weeks. But now we're in race season, it's sort of been, we'll probably meet just before I'm about to leave for a race week, so that we know, because he kind of helps me set like my goals, like how I would see a race as being successful. Because like, I mean, I'd go to a race where before I was working with him and be like, well, if I come in the top five, that's successful. But actually, you've not got any control over that. You've only got control over like how well I perform, and that's whether like I come into the race with my body in a good shape, basically. So I don't know, it could be anything small, like you had your nutrition in place and your hydration in place. So like actually setting all them process goals and just having someone to help me set them process goals and understand that these are the helpful goals, and putting a goal like I need to come top five is not helpful because you can't control that. Other people might go faster than you on the day. So yeah, that's been super helpful. And yeah, probably see him before and after a race now or in the season.
Sweet. Any kind of tools or techniques that you use, other than obviously the process and you kind of ticking your boxes along the way, but is there anything you use to help clear all the rubbish out of your brain and like help ignore some of those unhelpful thoughts?
Yeah, so come race,
tell us about the stickers on your bike.
Come race week, I've got well, not come race week, but all the time I've got these stickers on my bike, which are, one's a piano and one's a guitar, and they're now just sort of, they've kind of become just a symbol of like the fact of getting myself into this sort of zone and state and understand and just keeping your brain, I don't know, engaged on the right things,
focused,
yeah, and not getting bogged down with all the stuff that is not useful. But then those two symbols started off as being like, the piano is like trying to keep myself in like piano mode, which is piano mode for me is like
calm.
Pacing yourself, you're calm. So like, for instance, if you're on a stage, it might be like, and you've got like a sprint along a fire road for quite a way, it might be like, okay, we're in piano mode now, just find your pace and hit it, like, yeah. Go. Whereas guitar, which is like the heavy metal kind of mode, is like,
is it an electric guitar?
Yeah, it's one of them ones with like, you know, the spikes on the back and like and like Kiss makeup, can you imagine? You know what I'm saying, don't you? So that's basically the heavy metal mode, and that's when I'm like sort of turn it on in terms of like go quite aggressive with my riding. But then yeah, them two modes can be overdone. So like you can overdo the piano mode and be too chilled or too calm, and you can overdo the heavy metal mode and you can just probably crash, I would imagine, because you're a bit reckless and whatever. So yeah,
but you're switching between those modes in a stage,
yeah, right? So well, yeah, that was our sort of plan, was to try and like switch between the modes. But actually that's, we kind of realized at the first race that was too much to kind of go in and plan to switch.
You can't play
the
piano and the guitar at the same time, can you?
I certainly can't. No, I can just about play a guitar. But no, it's so that's why I say they've become more of a symbol about like being really present and just being like,
okay,
you can right now, all you can do is the best for you to perform.
Yeah, just helps you calm the brain a bit.
Yeah,
yeah.
Clear out the crap and
yeah,
focus on what's important. Yeah.
What about you, Martha, then? Bex is saying you're very chill. Do you ever struggle with any of this stuff where you're just like, eh, whatever, just pedal and it'll be fine?
I wish I could be like you sometimes.
I think I'm, yeah, just really chilled most of the time. Well, at
you
races,
weren't chilled on the way to the last stage.
At races, it kind of depends how practice has gone first. And if practice goes okay, then I'll obviously be more relaxed going into race day. But I'm usually tend to be pretty good at, if something goes wrong, I can like put it behind me pretty quick and move on to the next thing.
Yeah.
Like, I feel I'm good at doing that. Like if I have a bad stage, like I had a really bad stage, stage one in Madeira, but then I kind of put that behind me pretty quickly and then just thought, focus, just trust in the process and move on to the next one kind of thing.
So hard to do that as well.
Yeah. So I guess like, I'm just a natural.
Natural at not giving a...
No, but it's not like I don't care like how I perform though. Like I still want to do good. I just don't, I don't know, yeah. I'm just not as, I just don't stress myself over it.
Yeah. And it's not to do with like caring, like Mark.
Yeah, there's always bigger stuff to worry about, you know what I mean? Oh, I'm getting all preachy now.
Blooming heck. There's always someone else worse off.
Yeah.
Yeah, we are in a privileged position, I guess, bikes.
Racing and riding around the world. It's amazing. But like, and you have to, actually, that's another thing that I've been working on with the psychologist, because I came back from a race and I was just like, yeah, I just, actually, it was at Tasmania. And I was like, yeah, actually, I just kind of wanted to get home. I was going around the race and I was telling him how like the state, because I've been pretty stressed at that race, and I had a crash, and like I was kind of scared, and I was over it. I just wanted to come home, and I was saying to him, like, I just had all these thoughts, and like on all my race notes, I pretty much just written in capital letters, get me home. And he's like, just tell me more about that. And I was like, yeah, that's basically it. I wanted to come home. And he's like, kind of flipped it on his head, and he was like, you've got to remember, you have 8 opportunities a year, and like, you have like, you're riding for a company that's paying you to ride your bike. And it kind of flipped it on its head, and it was, and he sort of said, when you're having them sort of like get me home thoughts, which can, and they happened all last year, like when we had them races we didn't enjoy, and you kind of then go into like an appreciative state of mind, and you're like, actually, no, I'm here, and I'm like, this is one of my 8 chances this year, and probably in my career, so I'm only going to have about 100 chances, probably maybe not even that.
100? How many seasons are you going to do?
She's going to keep going. This girl's keeping on. Yeah. But yeah, so it flips it, and it's, I didn't know this technique before when I was in Tasmania, but then, yeah, when we were in Madeira, there was definitely parts of there where like, I thought to myself about, wow, I'm really grateful to be where I am, and this is an amazing country, and all the rest, and like, even if, because there's always parts of races you're not going to enjoy, and flipping it on its head there really helps.
Yeah, you mentioned race notes. Tell us a bit more about that. How much are you writing? Is it every day? Like, have you got, is it a diary? What format does it take?
No, not a diary, really. Just, I make 2 sets of notes. So basically after an event, I'll go through with my coach Adela. Like, she has a series of questions she wants to ask me. And it just, as soon as it's happened, so, I mean, I don't really want to chat to her usually because I'm tired. But we just have a phone call and she asks a load of questions. And it's just bullet point notes where she can, so then when we come to discuss it with the psychologist a couple of weeks later, it's just something to go off, and it reminds me how I was feeling and all the things I was thinking. So that happens after a race. And then when I'm actually at the race, I make notes off my GoPro in terms of like actual like stage notes, which kind of are quite funny. Really.
I do that too.
I could read some on my phone. They're dead funny. They're like, mine's turn like... left after where you saw, like, I think one of them was like, turn left where you saw Gusty having a wee in a bush.
Yeah, or like, keep inside where you had a crash.
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
Yeah.
So you'll review your footage after the practice sessions then? And
yeah,
scribble
kind of
down,
make
notes
on it. And then because we only have one run, so it's kind of like, you're still learning it as you race it the second time. And yeah, so when you get to the race run, it's good to just flick through the notes and be like, ah, yes, that's what's coming, and these are the key features I need to look out for on
and
the track.
And it reminds it visually, like if I write something like where someone was having a wheel,
it helps
like,
you visualize.
It helps you visualize where you were when you were practicing it, and then if you can see it, because when I watch GoPro, sometimes I'm like, did I write that? And then it kind of freaks me out a bit more. So actually the notes, because I used to be a bit more like, I used to make the videos and watch them at the top of the stages, but I found that's not actually that useful anymore, because I'm just watching this video and not really taking it in. Whereas if I make notes, I read them at the top before I set off on my actual race run, and just reading them is actually well more useful than watching the videos, I find.
So they're in your phone?
Yeah write them on.
Yeah, should we get some notes? Should we get some race notes up? I think
who's
I've
gonna
got
win?
Oh, this is kind of like an awkward pause now.
You have to cut this out. Yeah, Madeira stage 3.
Okay, day 1. Stage 1. First little lip, go off the left and open the corner up. Cut slightly left after the semi-open pedaling part. Inside, there's a loamy left where Tommy C was. Honestly, they're so random.
I've got long tree, awkward rock, right out to in. I don't even know what that means.
Oh, stage 2. Are we allowed to swear?
Yeah, if you want.
Stage 2, rocky bitch.
It was, though, to
rocky bitch. First left-hander, rocky corner, stay slightly right on the entrance. So some of the actual notes are really, like, specific, but it's kind of more just like, and it'll usually be at the start of the track,
it's just like,
but it sets you up for what you're going to then do for the rest of the track. Just as soon as you can remember, oh, yeah, there was that rock that I, in practice, really wanted to stay on the left of, it then just...
It just like triggers your memory
effect,
and makes you remember, and then just visualize the whole trail.
And I guess it helps you get in the zone a bit, maybe at the start of the stage.
Yeah,
like you've got something to do to keep you occupied.
Yeah, because we can. I mean, that's something I've been trying to work on in terms of my focus. Like, I'm definitely a bit like, we can be a bit silly. Like, I don't. The women's feel is pretty different to the men's. Actually, we take a very different approach to the racing, and we're quite happy, jokey, laughing around with each other because we're out there all day, every
pretty
day.
Chatty,
like, so we. We do like to be have a little slightly different approach to the men, but there's definitely times where I'm having to learn to actually, I need to switch into like my mode, and
now it's my turn to race kind of thing.
Yeah, getting yourself in the right mindset.
How long do you normally have at the top of a stage, like from after the transition?
30 seconds if we're little wheels. Yeah. Last year, Marth got to the top. I had 40 seconds.
In practice, so it was like a 2-hour climb. Well, 2 hours is how long we had for the transition. And half of it was up the road, like an alpine pass kind of thing. And then the other half was off-road around the back of this mountain. And in practice, we got shuttled up the road, so we didn't know how long it would take. And we just rode the off-road bit. Then came to the race, got up the road, started riding up. And just as I was getting closer, I was like, this is going to be really tight. And it got to the final bit where you couldn't ride up, you had to push up.
And there was riders coming down the side of you.
You could see the riders coming down, and you know who you're behind. And I was like, they're really close to me.
Yeah, they're already riding down the track, and you're like, oh, there are about four riders in front of me.
I had to run up this last bit, and then I sat down, pulled my knee pads up, literally sat down for like 5 seconds, and this guy went, okay, Martha, dropping in 30 seconds.
You didn't have any cheat pads in or anything.
And I was like, what?
And actually,
my music was still playing from going up. I couldn't put my gloves on because they were so sweaty. I had to put cheat pads in my helmet.
You say you're chilled out. This is the most unchilled I've ever seen, Martha. Well, if you shouted at everyone. I think someone said, oh,
I said, I can't do my helmet up because it was all twisted.
And then you went, this is not funny. I remember.
The starting guy started laughing at me. I was like, this isn't funny. I'm going to miss the start time and I'm going to get a penalty. I set off with my helmet undone as well.
Wow.
I did it up on the run.
Clippy ones, isn't it? Magnetic.
Yeah, but that was pretty stressful.
So sometimes we don't have long, but other times we've had ones in the past where we've got like half an hour.
Yeah. Can it be too long? Because you cool
down. Yeah, it can be way too long.
Sometimes there are delays and stuff and you have to wait longer. But usually, most of the time, it's all good.
Yeah, usually it's anywhere from 5 to 15, which is perfect.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So do you have any other pre-run or pre-stage rituals, like other than reading through your notes? Are there any little funny things you do to help yourself focus?
No, but I seem to do this weird shake thing on my head as I set off. Which I've noticed on my GoPro. I do this like little shake where
a little shimmy.
I do like a little shake. I think it must be to get like my goggles in place. I don't know. I noticed it. I was like, am I having a like little seizure or something? But no, turns out I do. I mean, I always put my goggles on when the countdown gets to 15.
Really? Yeah. I just always like quickly before I get on my bike to like get ready to start, I always like go through my bike, make sure my wheels are still on, make sure nothing's loose. And then make sure I'm not locked out on my suspension.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, that is a good one.
I do that as soon as I get there. Whenever I arrive and you check in with your...
I always, pull my gloves tight and then quickly put them on the handlebars as well. I don't know why. Yeah.
Oh, so the palm doesn't wrinkle.
Oh, yeah.
You need to get better fitting gloves.
Yeah. Right, let's talk a bit about this year so far. So, started off in New Zealand. Did either of you go to Crankworx? Or did you go straight to...
Well, it was spectated, but we didn't compete in anything, right. No.
Yeah. How was the race?
Ours was part of Crankworx, wasn't it? But it was at the start, so we had to travel.
I would like have liked to compete in like the dual slalom other stuff, but it's quite a big schedule to do all of that as well as race the Enduro and try and do well in the Enduro as well. And it's like, to do well, you probably don't want your long travel 29er enduro race bike to race dual slalom. So you want another bike. And then you've got to think, how am I going to get that bike? I don't want to take three bikes across the world to...
Yeah. Keegan Wright did a bloody good job, didn't he?
Yeah.
He must have been drinking some caffeine. He must have some
coffee. Yeah, fair play. He had a good weekend.
Yeah, really good.
First podium.
Yeah, first podium. It was a really weird feeling, actually. I don't know what's the best way of not sounding like a bit of a dick, but it was kind of underwhelming.
Okay.
Because my race never felt on the edge. It never felt crazy. And obviously it was I went home and cried in the shower for a solid 5 minutes. That's the only way I can kind of describe the feelings. But it was amazing. It's like what I've been working towards. But when I was right there, it kind of just felt a little bit underwhelming because I'd put together a race that just felt really calm and collected. And I mean, the terrain is like my kind of cup of tea, with that kind of like really nice clay dirt in the trees. Like I always seem to race better in the woods. Nothing felt crazy. And I suppose I didn't really get any too many like adrenaline kicks or like near death experiences, which is what I kind of thrive off. But then to actually have done what I've set out to do this year in the first race was just insane. Like,
does that make you think a different approach, it works for you, like compared to what you thought worked?
Yeah, I think, well, I spoke to a few people. Like, I spoke to Tracy after the race and she was like, yeah, no, that's racing. That's like when you've got it right, it's kind of a calm feeling. And I was like, oh, right, okay. And she's like, and that's like, because also riding off, I seem to ride off feeling quite a lot. So if I feel like I'm riding fast, I'm like, oh, I'm having a good race. But I mean, that wasn't the case at this race. Like, I didn't feel like I was riding fast. But so it was weird to go off that. So I am learning that, like, actually I need to try not to go off feeling too much, because you can still be having a good race, but not be feeling like you're pushing it and like on the edge or whatever. So yeah, I mean, I almost overthink quite a lot of stuff, and just because I'm super into it, I find it really interesting. So it's definitely made me scratch my head a bit about my approach to racing. And I think the biggest thing is like to not go in and be like, right, okay, I need to replicate exactly what I've just done there at this next race. But every race and every venue is so different.
Yeah.
Just the main goal being trying to get the best out of me on them tracks.
Do you feel the pressure ramp up over the weekend when you know you're, like, because you can see the times, right? You can access the
See, I mean, I don't tend to, I kind of go off my manager and mechanic's faces. Or like, it was, yeah, I mean, I knew in New Zealand I was doing well because like the photographers were like trying to take photos of me on the liaison. And I was like, why are they interested in me? And they were like, go on, Bex, give us a smile, give us a thumbs up, you're doing great. And I was like, well, I must be doing quite well. So that was a bit weird. And it's exciting for sure, but like the whole like, okay, that might be the case now, but the race isn't finished. That all kicked in, of course. And I don't like to look too much about the results until it kind of, it's not important until the end, I suppose. Yeah. So like, it's nice to know that you're doing well, but
yeah,
it can go the total opposite way if you know that you can be like, you can push too hard or whatever. So yeah.
What's your approach to that, Martha? Do you like to know where you're at?
Yeah, I feel like I like to know the pace I'm going. Obviously you go down a run and you feel like if you know whether you feel like you've done a good run or a bad run. I think the worst time is when you feel like you've done a really good run.
That hurts.
And then you don't get a good result and you're like,
yeah, that hurts. And that's the thing that actually is really unhelpful, because like if you find out, like as long as you're constantly thinking about the fact that what can I do to get the best out of me, you're better off thinking about like, okay, that track, I felt like I had good pace. I maybe hit some of the corners a bit slow or had like pretty poor exit speed. You can pick up on like things like that. So then if you then partner that with getting a result and being like, oh, I'm not happy with that, it can just set you off on like, oh, what?
Yeah,
what,
it can pretty quickly change your mindset. Yeah, when you're racing.
Exactly. And your mindset is like what you need to be controlling the situation, not like the context of what's happening. So, yeah,
it depends on the run as well.
If I've had a run that feels like a bad run,
I won't usually look at it. But if I've had like an average run, or like at the start of the day as well, I like to have a look, kind of see what pace I'm at, and then see where I'm at roughly, and then try and build it from there.
Yeah. I actually hate looking at the results, if I'm honest. Even at like the end of the race, like I hate looking at the results. Like,
oh, I quite like
only
it.
If I've ridden a race where I'm really happy with. And there was a couple last year the end of the season last year in finale, I was like, no, I feel like I put my best race together there. There's a couple of tiny things, but like as a whole, that's probably the best race. And I came fifth, I think. And I was like, and obviously it's a bit crap to have to be like, okay, I came fifth, but that was my best race I could have raced. And like, obviously I'd love to be first and that's my best race I can race, but that you have to take that because that's the best I could do.
Yeah. Do either of you do any post-race? Like, do you look at any of the data and compare yourself against other riders and look at kind of where you've lost time or gained time, or are you kind of staying away from that?
I don't. I think my coach probably does, but I don't know.
Mm. Every now and again, but not like too in depth.
I look at the positions, but that's more just to be like, right, I was consistently in the top six or whatever at that race, or I was actually like fast on some stages and really quite slow, like outside the top, not slow, but outside of the top 10 or something on that stage. So, but that's changing so much lately because the women's racing is getting a lot tighter. So like when you look at the overall results, there can be like in New Zealand, there was from me to Isabeau in first, there was 9 seconds. And then from me to second was 0.1 of a second. So like the racing was super tight.
Yeah.
Like, so that's interesting to see. because, and that's probably at the moment the yeah. most useful data for me, because it's like, okay, we're closing the gap. Yeah. And actually the whole women's field is closing the gap. So that's good to see.
Yeah, I like to look at the stage times more and then look at which ones I felt like I was good on, see where I was. And then, yeah, also look at the time gaps and say if I'm only like a few seconds from like another five places up, then I'm like, oh, okay, so that was actually not that bad. Like it might say I got 15th on one stage, but I'm only 10 seconds off 10th or something like that. Then it makes you realise that actually this is a competitive sport you're in, and just... Yeah.
Yeah. Like in Madeira, after day one, I was in 9th and I was like, well, I'm not happy.
Yeah.
But then I looked at the results and I was like, actually, 2 seconds over that whole day of racing, which was like 30 minutes, if I was 2 seconds faster, I'd have been in 5th or something. So I was like, actually, don't beat yourself up. The race isn't over. There's a whole other day. So, yeah.
I think that's like partly like the evolvement of the women's racing as well, though, because we've been used to like thinking, oh, top 10 in a women's is good, but now I think like top 15 in a women's is hard to get, like, just because there's just more and more racers
you
coming
be,
in and the time's getting such so much tighter.
You could be anywhere, yeah. Like, it kind of worried me when I've been at the sort of top, I've been starting to be a bit more consistently like in the top 5 or 6, it kind of worried me that I was suddenly like at the bottom end of the top 10, and I was like, what the hell? But then when I looked at the times, I was like, actually, no, it's just getting more, the feel is just getting so much tighter, which is fun.
You can get het up about like all the actual position and the number you're in, but when you look at the times, it's...
Why do you think it is getting so much tighter?
Everyone's training bloody hard. Like, the sport's developing, so, like, people that have... I mean, like, this is my 4th season now, so I've got 3 full seasons under my belt, but then there's people that have been doing it, like Katie and Isabeau, and they've been doing it for, like, what, like,
Katie's
5?
Done it from, like,
6
start,
years?
Hasn't she?
And, like, that's a big bank of training if you're training for something. Like at the moment, my goals, I've got goals for, like, in 2 or 3 years' time where I want to get, like, my ability to, and... It doesn't happen overnight. You can't train. So, like, that big bank of training for a lot of people that have been in the game a long time is what's bringing it all closer. And then, like, I don't know, everyone's building bigger features and gnarlier stuff. People are making better bikes, and, like, you can adapt bikes and change bikes so you can get it just how you want it. And, the whole industry is just getting more developed.
I think as soon as the times start to get tighter as well, and we've seen quite a few different, like, new faces on the podiums as well, and that... inspires more people and makes more people think, oh,
it's possible.
Well, if I do a bit more training, I could be up there, and everyone's just pushing themselves.
Like, any point now, pretty much anyone in the top 10 or 12 could podium, pretty much.
Yeah.
Which is really exciting, because it kind of, ever since EWS has started, it's kind of been pretty, the podium's been pretty set.
Pretty dominant.
It's only been this season where, like, I've even thought it's possible to get on the podium. And, like, before then, I'd never made a goal of getting on the podium. It's only this season that I had, because that's when I knew it was actually available. Like,
not available.
Yeah, it was. It's
never like realistic.
Bloody police. Are you? Vocab police.
No, it just sounds like when you say available, it sounds
up
like...
up for grabs.
Yeah, but like, oh, I don't know.
Cut her out.
Yeah, just
next question.
Cut that.
Do you think it's made a difference? Cecile obviously not been racing so far this season, and then Katie's been out for a bit as well. Do you think that's made a difference?
Sorry.
No, go for it.
Go on, she's got something to bloody say.
I think that's made more people be like...
feisty.
Yeah, so because Cecile's not there, people are like, oh, there's another spot on the podium almost. And
it's definitely
almost
driven
like
the attention to like the bulk of the field rather than, And gives you a push, doesn't it? You're like, oh, wow, the podium really is... like
available.
It's more available. there's definitely one step on the podium that's now much more available.
Do you think it almost? I mean, obviously, it's a shame when people have got injuries, but do you think it's been beneficial to the women's field to have that, even for a period of time, to have that opportunity?
100%. Because, and also, it's beneficial for the sport because a lot more people are following the women's racing because it's exciting.
Yeah,
like if you follow it live time, like. Our places move
dropping
around loads. Whereas, like, a couple of years ago, or even just last season, the positions of the podium were decided after 1 or 2 stages, which is pants. It's not interesting to watch. Like,
I agree.
Yeah. Thanks for that seal of approval.
I might have to go to the toilet, to be honest.
Do we need a break?
She's downed the glass of water.
All right.
Yeah, I got too nervous and I need a wee.
All right, everyone's back from the toilet.
Woo!
Yeah.
Refreshed and ready to go.
We're good to go. So let's talk a little bit about Go On Girls then, because that's been going for a while now. I think it was fairly new when we sat down last time. So is it like a year and a half, 2 years old?
Yeah, 2 years. I think we started in July. Oh, God, we're in June, yeah. Coming up to a two-year anniversary.
We'll have to make a video.
Get on it. Talk a bit about what you set out to achieve with Go On Girls, because I don't think many people know really what it is you're
Well, it's kind of developed, hasn't it? Because we originally set it up because we're a bit of a double act, like just wanted to
showcase what we were up to.
Yeah,
show us being silly, show what we get up to at the races and stuff like that.
But then, like lately, it's like since obviously we were organising the festival, which we'll talk about a bit more. But like we kind of realised what we've got and what we're sort of like starting to grow. We can actually do something with it. So we've started to realise that we can actually like start putting back into the industry, but. I mean, right now we can't because we don't really have we don't have any funding at the moment. But that's all stuff that we're like working towards and we want to do, because I think our main goal for Go On is to be able to like
give back
and like basically like how we started. Like we had like people that would be like, oh yeah, we'll send you some tires, or like we had people that we looked up to that we messaged and reached out to, that like Tracy like helped you a lot. She helped me as well. And we want to be able to do that for people that we can see coming up. Not even just people that we think are going to be good racers, but like just people that, like even people that want to ride bikes, and you can see that it's doing them a world of good. If we can do anything to try and facilitate more people on more bikes, especially women as well, like then that's why we're kind of going with this. And I think ideally we'd love to have our own little like UK team, wouldn't we? Like of like sort of young
rippers, like, young little rippers, yeah.
Awesome. So you guys aren't taking any money out of Go On Girls, all the merchandise and
No, we do everything financially that we're doing for Go On and like trying to fundraise. It's all we've set up as a social enterprise. So I think that's actually a big thing that we need to start trying to get out a little bit more, is the fact that, I mean, cause we don't want to shout about the fact that we're doing it not for ourselves, but at the same time, like I think a lot of people think that we do go on to just make some money for ourselves, but it's
we're not just pocketing it.
We never really started it to make money out of it. And then when we realised that we could bring in money, we realised we don't want that money for ourselves. We actually want to just put it back in to...
Give people the support that we've received from other people to get yourself into the racing. I don't even know.
And just riding. Because like even like the kind of stuff that me and Martha like started off doing... I don't know, the reason we set up Go On Girls is because we both created this kind of environment when we went out riding together, where we just felt like we could give anything a try, because we didn't mind making like a fool out of ourselves, did we?
In front of
and then
each
we'd
other.
Started filming it and putting it on Instagram and that. And like we want to try and create that environment for other people, because I think a lot of people are just so put off with peer pressure and like...
Yeah, especially women.
Yeah, and like we went round to Farmer John's yesterday, which is where we're holding the event, and... It is pretty intimidating when you first turn up, because you're like, okay, there's a few jumps and stuff in. Like and if it's a busy weekend, like I can imagine, like if I put myself in sort of the shoes of people that aren't maybe too confident, then yeah, it'd be overwhelming, and you probably wouldn't end up even getting on your bloody bike. So we want to try and tone it down and like, yeah, show that you can have a real good laugh once everyone's on the same sort of level and like about trying out new things and giving it a go.
Yeah, just get people enjoying it.
Tell us a bit about the festival then, Martha. Where did the idea come from in the first place?
Well,
where did the idea come from?
It just kind of all... It just kind of happened. And then, well, so we were going to do it... Was it last year or 2 years ago? We were going to do it at Llangollen when we started planning it, and it was... We only put it out to the world and said we were selling tickets like a few months before it.
No, it was weeks. And then we've really come on with our
pretty quickly after we announced it. We were like, hold up, we've done this too soon. We need to take a step back from it, reassess, get more support. Yeah, rein it in and make it as good as it can be and exactly what we envisage it to be this year. And that's what we're doing this year. And we put a load more time into it over the off season, and we're like all the way through the season, like in between racing, we're working on planning and organising things.
It's actually like a full-time job.
To make it happen, it is like a full-time job. just without getting paid.
So what's going to be happening then? Tell us all about, like, what does the festival involve?
Oh, let's get out the list.
Yeah.
The activities is what's keeping, like, us going, because I'm actually so excited for the festival itself, because it's basically just a big party of all different bike things we've got.
Obviously, there'll be, like, the bike park and the trails will be open, like, exclusively for everyone at the festival for the whole weekend. You'll be able to ride them. And then there's a pump track being built at Farmer John's.
Specifically for the festival, which is pretty cool. That's awesome. We only learned that yesterday. And I'm actually so excited by the pump track, because he's building brand new pump track, and it's going to be big. It's also going to be like almost like a dual track, like you could race.
Like crankwork
style. So it's going to be like a butterfly shape.
Sweet.
So that's kind of like, actually, we were just talking about it yesterday, and we were saying, actually, I think that's going to be quite a big focal point of the event, because everyone can ride a pump track. Like, kids on balance bikes can ride pump track. Yeah. So we're thinking that there's going to be quite a lot of, we're going to have like some sessions on there. So sort of like little mini races, but also just like different age categories or whatever, just different sessions going on there, where, because there's so much going on over the festival. We've got we've got an airbag coming in, we've got the pump track, we've got all the trails that are there anyway.
We're going to have like a dual slalom friendly race as well.
There's so much going on, and we're trying to work this schedule out at the moment, and like when we can have certain sessions on certain things, but like it's pretty jam-packed, isn't it? It's going to be hectic.
Yeah.
Especially for us, because we're trying to, our aim is to actually be able to get super involved with a lot of the riding and like ride with other people.
Yeah,
we're going to say, so we're going to have slots over the weekend where we'll be like, we're going to be at this jump section from 1 till 2 where you should all come, and we'll have like a little jam session, and then we'll be at the pump track from 3 till 4 and we're all going to have a pump off, and we'll have a trick off at the airbag and things like that. And we're going to have special guests there. We've got Veronique Sandler confirmed.
Awesome.
She's going to win the trick off, isn't she?
Katie Winton. They'll be there and just for people to like talk to and get a chance to ride with. And we'll have a Q&A session, like question and answer at the end of the day, in the Saturday evening.
There's basically like loads of different activities going on, which are like open all weekend. You can drop in on them. Like, I'm sure the pump track
is going to be the mountain bike version of Leeds and Reading Festival, pretty much.
It is, isn't it? Yeah. Basically. And it's just for women. So like, and like, we've had a few, when we put a pink bike article on, and we had a few like things, few comments of, as you do, of like people that just don't have a life, basically, saying like, well, oh, it's a women's only event, that's so sexist and blah, blah, blah. But I can see exactly where they're coming from. But if you look at the events that are happening, it's they're predominantly men. So like, even if they're not called a men's, like a male event, they kind of are anyway. And so we wanted to make it exclusively women, just so that there can be an environment where like everyone will want to give it a go.
To recreate that environment that we initially found, isn't it? Where
where
we're just confident with each other to try new stuff and be silly and to fail as well.
But I mean, and a lot of people have bought tickets, and I think they've also bought spectator passes, which I presume are like husbands or
guys can get spectator passes. We're not going to be like, there are no men allowed on this.
Yeah, we're not like that. We're not weird. But
All the family can come along and spectate. There's also a under 16s pass and a under 5s pass.
Yeah, under 5s come free, so we want the kids to come and have a pump. Have a pump on down the pump track.
Yeah, awesome. It'd just be a good vibe, good weekend, a nice place to hang out. So I've heard the weather looks good as well for that weekend.
You booked that in.
Early there, yeah, we booked in the sun.
We're also going to have a raffle there, which Marion kindly giving us an Alpine Trail bike, which is actually the bike that I race on. So that'll be the main prize
as well. Second-hand bike? You know, they won't want that.
A new version of my race bike.
Oh, there we go.
And there's a lot of other brands giving us donating prizes to that raffle, and you'll only be able to get tickets at the festival for those.
Okay, and there's some brands are coming along with like demo bikes and stuff as well. Is that right?
Yeah, we've got Marin and Ibis, because they're sort of like supporting the event quite heavily. They're both coming along with demo fleets, which everyone can, there's no pre-booking sort of thing. You just sort of turn up, and if you want to demo a bike and test one out, then you can. And there's also Cotic coming along for the Saturday. They're going to have, they've created a pretty cool group of women, they're doing a similar thing with trying to inspire more women to ride bikes. They've created a the Women of Steel. So they're going to be there and sort of just promoting women on bikes, basically. And yeah, you can try out. So you just swap your bike in and you can go out and test one of their bikes out on the trail. And I mean, if you're in line for a new bike, then there's three different brands at the moment that you could try out bikes of.
Cool. And then big party in the evening.
Yeah, we've got what is he called? DJ Rossetti.
Yeah, family friend Steve Rossetti. He's going to...
That's a good DJ.
It's a good name, isn't it?
DJ Raz.
DJ Raz. DJ Razzle.
Yeah, that's going to have more of a reggae vibe, so we'll be skanking all night long.
Oh, skanking.
And a bar, I hope.
There'll be a bar. Yeah, that's a work in progress at the moment, but there's going to be some form of alcoholic beverages, of course, and soft drinks.
And non-alcoholic.
Yeah, and soft drinks for the kids. But we've got a pretty cool, like, Moroccan-style big mass. It's huge. It's actually, like, the size of the field.
So Bex, like, booked it. And then we went a few months ago to Farmer John's, and I can't remember the distance, but I paced it out, like, how long it was, and I was like, oh my God, is this even going to fit in the field?
So is it like a big yurt type thing?
Yeah, like a yurt, like, but it's got Moroccan style. It's like inside, I think it's like orange or something. It's pretty cool, and you can have like all the front open, and so obviously if the weather's nice, we're going to have that all open and like try and get some beanbags down there. And
So that'd be a great hub for everyone to just mingle. We're going to have like a constant slideshow up of our YouTube videos and stuff like that.
Yeah,
as well.
And people can go and see the Malaysia edits and stuff. Have a good little giggle to them. So
yeah.
Nice. And what kind of scale is it? Like, how many people are you thinking you want to get there?
Well, we wanted it to stay quite small. So we have capped it. Like, shut up.
That's what I was going to say. We've capped it.
We capped it at 100 tickets. More just so that we know that, like, roughly what's going on. So at the moment we sold 50 tickets, so we're halfway through selling our tickets.
But if/when we reach 100, depending at what time, we might be able to release more tickets.
Yeah, obviously we have insurance and all that stuff, so we have to. There is a number of how many people we can have on site, but we always wanted it to be quite a small, close knit festival, because I quite like to get to know people.
Everyone will get to know each other.
And we've had some people asking, like, I don't know anyone that's coming to the festival, and I'm pretty new into mountain biking, but am I going to be like the only one that's on my own? And like, they're like, when they said, like, we got an email and I was like, you should come to our festival then, because like, that's perfect. Like, you're going to meet more people that like ride bikes, and like, there isn't loads of women that ride bikes. So if you meet loads of people at that festival, it's likely that you're going to be able to take it away and you get a friendship there that you can go ride bikes with someone else. So there's going to be a range of people. I'm sure I think we've got some families booked in, and then some of the guests obviously are absolute shredders, like Vero and Katie and that, so it's going to be a big variation in
and
ability.
We'll be there.
Yeah, we'll be there casing jumps.
Hey!
I'll be there casing jumps.
And there's camping on site, is there, so people can...
So the entry ticket gets you two nights of camping. You turn up Friday afternoon and two nights of camping, and then obviously your 2 days of all the activities and everything that's going on. There's nothing, we didn't want it to be, all inclusive. So don't want it to be like, oh, you've got to pay for this event and that event. So it's just one ticket, come and do whatever you want, try everything. The only restrictions are like, the airbag's got an age limit, limit on the minimum age.
There's also a glamping upgrade. You can opt to get a bell tent. Yeah. Which will, be a nice glamping option.
Yeah, they're pretty cool, them, actually. They've got, like, all little fairy lights and stuff.
Yeah, that's a really good option, actually, for families going.
Yeah, and if you don't want the hassle or you don't own a tent or whatever, you can, I think it's 50 quid each, is it? You can just get four mates together and have a tent that's all there, set up easy.
Perfect.
Jobs are good. And
so how much is a ticket for the weekend?
So it's £75 for a ticket.
Okay, which is like a race entry these days.
It is. Well, it's actually a bit cheaper, is it not? Oh, well, EWS are like ridiculous.
Well, yeah.
But it's like a race weekend, yeah. But obviously, you're not just racing one track. We are having a race as well, actually. We're having a dual slalom race in the evening Saturday.
Just a friendly race, though. There will be no actually official timing.
Yeah. We don't want to put people off and be like, okay, get your elbows sharp and it's dual time. But it's
dual time,
and it's the track as well. We've had a few people ask if the track's going to be like gnarly, because obviously the 50-1 boys have got a track at Farmer John's, a dual track, and we are taming that. We're going to be making quite a lot of alterations on site, like filling in, putting like little boardwalks and stuff on drops and things. So
to make everything just more rollable and just easier to to progress on.
Yeah.
And just a bit more confidence inspiring, isn't it?
Yeah. And then, yeah, so £75 for rider's ticket, and then under 16 rider ticket is £50. And
sweet.
Yeah, gets you. And you're going to get a good little goodie bag. I'm working my hardest at the moment of like pretty much filling the goodie bag with all sorts of products.
Cool. A free t-shirt.
Where do people need to go if they want to get involved?
www.goongals.com/
two A's.
The festival.
Two A's, yeah.
Yeah.
G O W A A.
Thanks for that clarification.
I was just thinking out loud.
I tell you what, I'll put a link on the website.
Yeah, yeah, that's much easier.
And then people can find it.
There's also a link in our bio on our Instagram.
Yeah. Just type in Go On Gals anywhere on Google, you know, it'll pop up, I suppose.
Cool. What's the hardest bit about organising a festival then?
The stress!
It just feels like we're trying to spin 5 plates in one hand and juggle 6 balls in the other hand.
Impressive.
Putting it lightly.
Yeah.
But because our main commitment and focus is racing, and we obviously have our personal sponsors that we ride for, we've got to do that as a priority, and we're also trying to organise it at the same time. It's just finding the time and getting together as well is a hard part where we need to...
We do a lot, like on FaceTime, where we're like organising and we're just back
and
forth.
We have business calls.
Oh, we do, don't we?
Big business.
When we set up this Go On Girls, we never thought we'd be doing this, but we do actually speak most days about something to do with the festival.
At the end of the day, yeah, we're business women.
on a bad wage.
It's cool. It's good. It's good that you're doing something for the sport.
Yeah, no, it's fun. It's really fun, and we're aware that we've got. It's the first year of the festival. We want to make it an annual festival, and we've got loads of support and people interested from the industry, people that we work with, and they love it. But I think a lot of people are just waiting for us to get it off the ground. And so the first year, we know that it's like going to be the hardest, and it is stressful. And we just want to give it the best chance we can, and then if it goes well, we'll be buzzing to do it again because it'll be... We just need more people to know that it's happening every year. Like, we forget, because it's our life, we forget that... People don't know it's even happening. Like, you talk to some female riders, they don't. We're like, what, you've never heard of the Go On Girls Festival? They're like, no.
What do you mean?
But that's because we just think about it all day, every day. So.
Yeah, that's true.
So it's just that, the word
like,
out.
It's just that element of unknown as well, especially. Yeah, that's definitely one of the hardest parts, that it is the first.
Yeah, first one, and you just don't. We've got an idea of how, like, we can see how it's going to go. But, you messaged me the other day, didn't you?
Oh, yeah,
I've
God.
Just had a dream
of
the event going all wrong. It started, and I was like, oh, no.
I had a dream that the amount of tickets we'd sold, that was how many people were there at the festival, and it wasn't enough. And then it got to the Sunday, and then the photographer wasn't there. And I was like, where's the photographer? Why isn't he here?
So it's getting to you.
Yeah, it can be stressful. Yeah, it can be stressful.
And then Bex told me that if you get dreams about an event going bad, it means they're going to go well.
Yeah, it means it's going to go well.
Oh, there you go.
I'm
happy
not
days.
Sure how true that is, though.
Cool. What else have you got planned? Have you got other stuff kind of in your minds for further out for Go On Girls?
Yeah, we wanted to do some coaching for sure. I think at the moment, while we've not got any money behind Go On Girls, because obviously to be able to put back into sport, you kind of need money. So at the moment, we are going to start looking at stuff that we can do that's free, so like our support, like doing coaching and stuff. So we already do like whenever we can, because obviously we're on busy schedules and with racing, but we already do like ride outs, so Go On Girls ride outs. So we did a few
over the off season.
We've got a few more in the next couple of months coming up, and we want to turn some of them into like some kind of like, I don't want to say coaching, but like, what did I call it before? Session jams, like kind of like a just a session where people we'll just
like
session
apart
a trail and we'll just learn
not
a few
necessarily
skills.
A big ride out, because people don't always have that kind of endurance, but just like having fun playing on your bikes and getting that environment
and
again.
Just having it as like a free session and come along and pick up something new or try at least.
And
if you don't learn anything, well, you didn't partake, because I'm pretty much sure you'll learn something.
Yeah. And if people want to support it and help you out, like from the financial side of things, is merchandise, is that the best?
Yeah, so like, I mean, we're always looking for like any support in terms of like industry support. But if people are wanting to support themselves, like, yeah, merchandise, we've got loads of different things on. We've got stem caps, mud guards, special go on mud huggers, t-shirts, jumpers, hats, loads of cool stuff. Beanies. Martha's quite an artist, you see, so she's pretty good.
I am
the
actually the graphic designer of Go On Girls.
Yeah,
yeah. But yeah, as we said, all that money just goes straight back into the pot, and eventually we want to put that back into the younger generation.
Yeah, send out everyone a free T-shirt. That's what I want to be able to do. Right now, them T-shirts still cost us money.
Yeah, yeah. We're just like, we can't wait for it to not bother us, and just like, oh, you meet like a little girl on a ride and she's really enjoying it. You're like, here, have a T-shirt. Want to be like that, but at the moment we're just like, actually, you can't have the T-shirt because we've not got the budget.
It'll get there.
It'll get there. I know it'll get there. It's fun project though, because we're both racing and we're both doing what we're doing, it's like, it's really nice to have something else to do.
Yeah, I really enjoy doing it.
It's fun. That's...
We do wonder sometimes, like, what do athletes like actually do?
If they don't have another
because
project.
Because they train and then they just rest. What do they do?
Yeah, like, if you didn't have another project going on, I think I'd be bored. I mean, I'd be doing something else. I'd probably be doing up a house or something.
Cool. Good stuff. Well, we'll wrap it up. But if people want to find out more about yourselves and Go On Girls, where's the best places for them to head? Is it Instagram, website?
Just head up to Wynn Hill. I'll probably be up there
riding my bike.
But if you're not local to where Bex lives, you can also visit Instagram. At go_on_gals.
Yeah.
Bex_BarrettHonor.
Martha G. Also check out our YouTube channel. Always trying to upload new videos on there, longer videos.
Yeah.
Cool. We'll put all the links in the show notes.
Good stuff.
People will be able to find it all there.
Mega.
Excellent.
Awesome. Thank you very much for having us ramble on your show.
Thank you.
It's all good. Yeah, it's nice to have a catch up. And it's cool. I like what you're doing. It's awesome. I wish you the best of luck for the festival. And Go On Girl stuff in the future. We'll keep
Thank
an eye
you.
On how you're getting on. And yeah, good luck for the rest of the season.
Thank you so much.
Stay tuned for the Malaysia podcast.
Okay. Yeah. She's dying to do a podcast on the Malaysia
we'll
trip.
We'll have to do that on a separate occasion.
Yeah.
Cool. Nice good one. Stuff. All right.
Thank
thanks
you.
A lot.
Bye.
All right. That's it for our catch up with Bex and Martha. If you want to find out more about what they're doing with Go On Girls or about the festival, then head to goongirls.com. That's GOWANGALS.com. If you've enjoyed listening, then tell your friends and share the episode on your social media. It really helps the podcast grow. Thanks to PNW Components for supporting the episode. Don't forget, they've got a great listener discount offer for you, so head over and check them out. All you need to do is go to pnwcomponents.com and use the code DOWNTIME at the checkout for 10% off. Please give us a follow on social media where we're at Downtime Podcast. Subscribe to the show so you get all of our episodes delivered straight to your device. And if you want to get yourself some exclusive Downtime Podcast goodies, then head to downtimepodcast.com/shop. All right, we've got another awesome episode coming up really soon. But until then, get out and ride.